Hey guys, thanks for joining us for this 108th episode in Season 2 of Good Questions with Cameron Dole. Special guests on this episode include comedians and podcasters Anna Saragina and Kyle Minozzo. Episode 5 of Truth Hounds podcast is available now wherever you get podcasts. We'll also visit with celebrity chef and judge Gail Simmons, new episodes of Top Chef Amateurs, and we'll also talk about the public's pandemic cooking interests. We'll also talk with Icelandic-based country artist Axel O. He's got a new single, Here I Wanna Live. And it's time for our monthly visit with Meathead Goldwyn. We'll talk seafood grilling ideas and tips, fish, mussels, octopus, and more. Of course, if you would, please take the time to subscribe, comment, leave some feedback, check out the shop, and I'd really appreciate it if you'd share with your friends. Now, next time you go to the dentist, tell them that you've been doing this and see if they slap you. People on TikTok are claiming you can get your teeth a lot whiter if you scrub them with Mr. Clean Magic Erasers. Now, some lady who thinks fluoride is dumb recently told people she's been doing it for a while and that it's fine as long as you don't let it touch your gums. She says she hasn't asked her dentist about it, but they always say her teeth look great, so it must be fine in her eyes. A study back in 2015 actually found magic erasers can remove stains from your teeth, but most experts say it's not something to try. One dentist talked about it on YouTube, said it's like scrubbing your teeth with really fine sandpaper. So if her teeth look white, it might be because she stripped all the enamel off. A new podcast, actually episode 5, dropped today, The Truth Hounds, and we've got Anna and Kyle with us today. And first off, appreciate you guys taking some time to be on the show.
Thank you so much for having us.
Thanks for having us.
Now, who was the one that came up with the idea Truth Hounds? I mean, whose idea was that? Who's going to take the claim on that?
Well, it's a collaborative effort, and I'm not saying that just for show. Everything was 50-50, but having said that, on record, in a court of law, Kyle was the first one to be really curious. So we'll give this one to Kyle's curiosity.
There you go. Now, tell us the Truth Hounds. I mean, going through some of those little small mysteries and those sayings that we hear all of our lives, I mean, how deeply do you delve into it, and how much do you just geek out on the opportunity to do so?
I mean, it's both. I mean, we are going very deep into things, and sometimes it seems like we take the wrong direction, but we just keep going. We don't actually turn back. We just, like, I'll just say we dare to go deep. So not to give too much away, but in the episode that comes out today, when we're investigating boredom, you know where we dare to go? We dare to go to Costco, where Kyle stares at a wall. And well, people walk by and look at me, and I was wearing a bright red sweatshirt.
So she's noticeable.
It looked very odd.
I'm not going to say you looked weird, but, you know, you looked interesting.
And that's the salt of life.
Yeah, an interesting look. That's not the compliment you're going for when you get dressed in the morning, is it?
No.
You wear it well. You wear it well. That's about as bad, right? Now, tell us the early episodes that you've had and the feedback that you get from listeners. I mean, what's the kind of feedback you get?
I think we should make it clear that it is, we are trying to be funny. It's not everyone, you know, right now I am actually trying to be funny, but I don't, you know, maybe that's not how it comes across.
Sometimes we are very subtle.
It's very subtle comedy. And so I think sometimes people also go into it thinking like, oh, these people are like some kind of experts, or they like know what they're doing. We do not know what we're doing.
Yeah, let the record show that we do not know what we're doing. We are absolutely not investigators. Our qualifications are that we have a lot of time.
We have a lot of time and we're two best friends. So
the questions that people don't, it's not that they don't dare to ask them. It's that they might just move on with their day after they're done asking them. We don't move on. We stick around.
What are some of the other kind of topics that you guys are looking forward to in some of the upcoming episodes?
Why does it feel so good to give back?
Yeah, like what makes you feel it? Like when you give something to someone, it makes you feel good, the giver. I think later we have something, we have an episode about art that you can look forward to. What is art? Mm-hmm.
And for you, where did the podcasting idea come from? Have you been into podcasts? Have you been a podcast listener for forever, or was it just on a whim?
I admittedly do listen to a lot of podcasts, whereas what Kyle brings to the table is that she doesn't listen to any podcast.
I'm so sorry.
No disrespect to the podcasting game. I mean, but I think that the things we want to do are really, really ambitious. And so with in the pursuit of like maybe a video format, they just wouldn't be possible in as quick of a turnaround, because the thing is that we have a lot of time, but we also have little patience, so we need something to turn around real quick, and we can go as big and I'll say funky as we want.
Now, what is the biggest challenge for you on the podcasting side? I know doing podcasting on this side, audio on a radio guy, that kind of goes comfortably, but that thing in front of me is my biggest challenge. What's your biggest challenge in it?
I would say, like, for us, we do so much in a single episode that it's like a lot of editing and a lot of hours we clock in to make sure that it sounds very legit and sounds like investigative podcast. So if you listen to anything, the production value, I would say, is amazing for it being just us and our editor.
a simple, modest business of three.
Yeah, because I feel like a legit investigative podcast, they probably have a huge team.
They got a guy on retainer who should go look up a news article for you.
A researcher.
We don't have that. We got to get up at 3 a.m. We got to look at that news article.
We got ourselves.
3 a.m. is uncalled for. I mean, being a morning radio guy, 4 o'clock, that's bad enough, right?
That's what I'm saying. Get off my jaw.
Now, as the numbers, when you start the podcast out, I mean, how do expectations change? I mean, you're 5 episodes in. I know when I started the podcast, I had no expectations. And then all of a sudden you start building expectations. What's that like?
I think we have a little, we get together, Anna and I, we have little pep talks and we go, no matter what's going on, we continue. We don't let anyone interfere with what we think. We just keep doing what we want to do. And I think, like, hopefully the listeners will come that are supposed to hear it and will like it, you know? So we're going to continue to do our thing.
Yeah. Exactly.
And Kyle's not listening anyway, right?
No.
Yeah, I mean, I don't even hear it, so I don't even know what it is. I haven't heard her show. So. Yeah,
she says it's great production quality, I think.
No.
Now, Anna and Kyle, if folks want to find more info about the Truth Hounds, not only the podcast, I know you guys, social media is a huge part of the podcasting as well. Where's the best place to find the podcast and keep up social wise as well?
You can find a podcast wherever you get podcasts. So it's like iTunes, Stitcher,
the iHeartRadio app, which we have to love.
And then if you wanted to follow us on Instagram, it's at Truth Hounds.
But then on Twitter, and this is, I mean, I hope you're sitting down for this one. It's at The Truth Hounds.
Oh, no.
We couldn't
secure just Truth Hounds. No.
But I would say definitely follow us, because we put like a little bit behind the scenes photos and things from the making of the show to show you that it's legit and that we're not like using sound effects. Like we are, when we say we're at Costco, we recorded at Costco.
When I say that Kyle's looking at a wall in Costco and looks very interesting, I mean it. She is at the wall at Costco and she does look okay, but it's behind the scenes footage. Also, we do a lot of audience kind of participatory stuff. So we put out what we call calls to action, where we ask people to come in and help us out and participate. So Instagram's where we do most of our, work.
So if anyone has an idea for an episode or anything like that, we're like down, you should message us.
We even have a tip line.
We have a tip line.
Oh, yeah. A tip line. Man alive, you guys are big scale for just a 3-man operation.
A tip line that I will personally be listening to and answering. So be careful about what you say. Yeah, she's listening.
Okay. That's awesome. Well, Anna and Kyle, thank you guys so much for taking the time to be on the show. I'm looking forward to catching up with the latest episode, and hopefully we can catch up again real soon.
Absolutely. Thank you so much for having us.
Thank you for having us.
If you want a reason to hit up your local burger place, I've got it for you. Today is National French Fry Day, and to celebrate, here are a few interesting stats from recent polls. Number 1, 83% of Americans like French fries. Only 4% dislike them. 12% are neutral, and the remaining 1% don't know how they feel. Somehow. Number 2, French fries are the second most popular American dish behind hamburgers. Number 3, French fries are the number 2 food people can't live without, second only to pizza. Number 4, in a ranking of the ultimate fast food fries, McDonald's is number 1 by a long shot. Chick-fil-A is second, followed by Five Guys, Wendy's, and Arby's. And number 5, when it comes to the style of fries, regular is the most popular, with curly fries being a close second. Steak cut, crinkle, and waffle fries round out the top 5. You know, we love cooking, we love chefs, we love the shows along with that as well. The 18th season of the Emmy-winning Top Chef is currently airing, plus the new spinoff Top Chef Amateurs, which premiered back on July 1st. We've got Top Chef Gail Simmons with us today. And first off, Gail, always great to visit with you.
It's my pleasure to be here. Thank you so much for having me.
Now, Gail, tell us, what was your initial response to the idea of Top Chef Amateurs? I mean, how hard was it for them to maybe to twist the arm, if you will?
It was pretty great. I think that it came at the perfect time for all of us. Top Chef Amateurs was really born out of the pandemic. In a year where restaurants closed and were struggling so much, one of the silver linings was seeing how much ambitious, beautiful home cooking was happening all over the world, really. And right here at home, we saw the explosion of home cooking and in a really big way. So we just thought it's the perfect time to lift people up, to find some of the best home cooks out there who were also mega fans of our show over the years, and bring them to the Top Chef Kitchen. It's the first time in our history that we've ever brought home cooks into our kitchen and sort of let them run free. These are not professionals. You know, our show, Top Chef, we've been making for 15 years, is all about chefs at the highest level. But Top Chef Amateurs is about people who are the opposite. They are great home cooks. They are architects and accountants and teachers, but they are just cooking for their families in their own kitchens every night, which I have to tell you is not the same thing as cooking in a restaurant. So bringing them into the Top Chef Kitchen to experience its size and its scope and its power is sort of amazing. And we have a lot of twists and turns along the way for them that kind of gives them this day in the life of Top Chef that they will never forget.
And you talked about some of the things that people are used to seeing on Top Chef. Were you surprised by maybe some of the expertise that was shown by some of these amateurs in some of the things that the regular Top Chefs battle with?
You know, it's all definitely a scale. You know, the challenges in some ways are different because the scope of what we're doing on Top Chef Amateurs is so different.
Right.
We customize the challenges, even though we base every challenge we give them on an iconic challenge from our history of Top Chef. We tailor it to them. But I think a lot of the same themes arise for them as they do on the regular show. For example, it's their first time in the kitchen. All of these Top Chef Amateurs on season one, I mean, remember, we shot way back in the fall in the middle of a pandemic. Most of them hadn't left their houses in 8 months when they came quarantined for 7 days alone before they even came into our kitchen. They walk into the kitchen for the first time. They look around for 20 minutes, and then we make them start cooking. And they very quickly realize, just like our regular Top Chef, it is a massive kitchen. They don't know where anything is. There are 7 cameras swarming around them. It's hot. It's fast. They are working against the clock. And time seems to, like, be a roller coaster. And they have to contend with all of these things, which is exactly the same as our chef. You know, so it really is incredible to watch the adrenaline and the energy and how quickly they have to think on their feet. I mean, we say, you've got an hour. They have to come up with a dish, and somehow they do it. And more times than not, even with Top Chef amateurs, the food's pretty good.
For you also, this is the first Top Chef show to have an all-female production head team. And in the times we're living in, Gail, I know you've got to take great pride in that as well.
I really do. It's something I'm very proud of. You know, we've always had a female production team in terms of our executive producers. And obviously, Padma has been a host for a number of years. But this is the first show that Top Chef as a brand has ever done where we had a female host in me, two female executive producers running the day-to-day, and a female director. She's a woman who has been on our camera operation crew for years. She's been shooting us, and she's kind of risen in the ranks. She is the director of Last Chance Kitchen with Tom Colicchio, you know, the digital series mm-hmm. that we do off of the show. And, you know, she was promoted, and now she's directing Top Chef Amateurs. And, you know, it's an amazing team of women who I just love going to work with every day.
Gail, how much different, we know you've been as a judge for so many times. How much harder or is it easier for you as being the host instead of the judge?
You know, I was the host of Top Chef Dessert, several years ago when we did that spinoff. So I had done it before. And, you know, I feel very lucky because, yes, it is a different role. In some ways, it's more demanding. The days are a little longer. The hours can be longer. I'm on my feet longer. But I've been on the set for so many years with the same crew and in the same kitchen, more or less, that it also just feels like home. So it's very comfortable. It's almost like, you know, when you're a kid, you have to go to a new school and you have to start fresh and not be intimidating. But this is just like a different classroom at the same school. I feel at home. I know where everything is. I know the people. Everything's familiar. But it actually is very natural. And I've been watching Padma do it for so many years. And she's such a good friend and been such a kind of like big sister to me that I never felt like that it was a challenge I couldn't rise to.
And Gail, I know we talked earlier in the pandemic, and what were maybe some of the inspirations that you found in the kitchen? Did you find any new inspirations or new ideas?
Every day. I mean, that's what I love about cooking, right? I mean, you can cook the same dish every single day, and it's going to be different a little bit every time. You add a twist, you can add different ingredients. And spending so much time at home over the last year and a half, even though I was a professional cook when I started, you know, I went to cooking school, I worked as a cook, I've worked in food media for 20 years of my life. But when you're cooking at home at that volume, just like everyone, I don't think there's a person in this country that didn't become a better cook in some way this year. Whether they were cooking from scratch and learning to boil water, or they were recreating a tasting menu from their favorite restaurant. I mean, we all improved just from the sheer consistency and volume that we all had to cook, right? I had to feed a family of four every single day, three meals a day. And my husband is not a cook. He's a great cleaner and he's great at inspiration. He's a great eater, but even he became a better cook this year, you know? And we all just kind of hunkered down and cooked together. My kids did more cooking. You know, we took on bigger projects because we had the time at home. I did a lot of late night cooking. Like that was where my stress got out at night. I would be, you know, running around during the day trying to keep my kids in school and do my own work, and I had no time to cook, and then I'd put my kids to bed and I'd turn on the oven at 10 p.m. and, you know, bake a cake because I could focus my energy and it was sort of my relaxing time. Put on some music, have a glass of wine, and take on a cooking project, and then, you know, often it was something that my family could eat the next day.
That's awesome. And Gail,
like you learn every day, you know, cooking, I feel like you're never not learning. That's what I love about being on Top Chef. Top Chef amateurs too. I mean, they taught me a lot, these cooks.
That's right. And Gail, what you said to start that answer, I'm going to save that and share it with my wife. Cause every time I cook things are a little bit different and she doesn't understand. I'm the cook at the house. She's not. So I appreciate you sharing that. It is different every single time. But now Gail, if folks want to find more info, obviously about the show and then everything you've got going social media wise, where's the best place for folks to keep up with that?
Well, the best place to find me is at GailSimmons.com, GailSimmons.com. I'm on Instagram at GailSimmonsEat. I'm on Twitter at GailSimmons. And, of course, you can find everything you need to know, including full episodes of Top Chef Amateurs, at BravoTV.com/Top Chef.
Well, again, Gail Simmons, thank you so much for your time today. I look forward to the new episodes, and hopefully we can catch up again real soon, my friend.
Thank you so much. I hope you enjoy it.
Now, not every day can be a great day, but what's something small that keeps you from entering a bad day territory? Well, a new survey looked at the top simple pleasures Americans love. And number one is something we can help you out with. That's listening to music. You know, radio guys. Now, here are the top 10. Number one, listening to music. 59% said it's one of their top simple pleasures in life. Number two, watching a good TV show or movie. Number three, eating a favorite food. Number four, laughing at jokes. Number five, getting a good night's sleep. Number six, making someone smile. Number seven, receiving some good news. Number eight, holding hands with a loved one. Number nine, getting some fresh air. And number 10, the smell and sound of rain. Country singer, songwriter, a world traveler as well. We've got Axel O with us today. And first off, Axel, I want to thank you so much for taking the time to visit.
Yeah, good to be here. Thank you for having me.
Now, I'm just going to start out in the beginnings. When did music start for you? When did the inspiration, when did you know that music had gotten a hold of you?
I think it was when I went down to the basement. I got my dad's bass. He was in a band when I was about 8 years old. And I was trying to play Smoke on the Water with Deep Purple. That's my first memory. But I come from a musical family, and I was raised playing music with my father. He's a jazz musician, and I played bass with him, you know, on jazz standards. And as I grew up, you know, I got into pop and rock, and then later country.
What is it about country that seems to draw them in after the, did you have to have the wild ride out of the way first?
Yeah, I guess I did. I guess I did. Yeah, I was. I think as I got better as a musician, as I learned to sing more, and as I got to be a better guitar player, I started to realize that it takes talent to play country music, and it was challenging. And I found that it made more sense to me, and I wanted to do more of it.
And we mentioned world traveler. I know you've got a background in Iceland. Is that where the original upbringing started at?
Yeah, I grew up in Iceland, and when I was 16, I moved to Oklahoma. As a matter of fact, I went to high school in Tulsa, in Memorial, and then I went to Claremore in Rogers State. Hey, dog. And then I lived in Texas for quite a few years, and then I moved back to Europe, and I've lived in Italy, Germany, and I currently live in Iceland, so I travel. Yes.
Yeah. Now, what is the music like? The different places you go, do they intake country music, or is there even necessarily genre specifics as you go to different countries?
Yeah, I mean, obviously, country music is what 50% of Americans listen to country music. Obviously, the ratio is higher there, but it's growing in the European countries quite a bit every year, and. You know, pop is the predominant genre in Europe, but country seems to be coming up, especially with all the crossover, and there's such a variety in country music today that people go for.
Now, for you, when did you know that playing was something for you to do? Was the guitar the first instrument that you played?
Actually, I started on bass, yeah, like I said earlier, and then I took piano, I took classical piano, and I realized that was not for me at all. I think I gave that one up after about a year. So I learned music theory and a little bit of that. But then I got into acoustic guitars, and that's really where my main instrument today. Because also, as I progressed as a singer, I wanted an instrument that I could take with me and play live and accompany my singing. So that's pretty much how I got into playing guitar.
Yeah, when I was in high school, you know, I sang, and my goal was to always be able to play and sing something. And the guitar, I didn't have a guitar. I was always around a piano, so I sat down at a piano. But yeah, a piano is not very mobile.
Nope. And it's a hard instrument too, you know.
Extremely.
Especially in country, there's not that many songs where you can accompany yourself on piano.
That's right.
A couple of Rascal Flatts songs, and that's about it.
Now, the new single, Here I Wanna Live, where did this one, when did the write on this one happen for you?
That happened actually this past winter, and during COVID. And I was basically sitting here where I live, looking out the window, and I said, I got to write about something. And I didn't have any... Well, I guess what I was thinking, I'm living in the country. I live next to a river. I live next to a mountain. I realized how lucky I was, you know, during the pandemic to be living in the country. So that's what inspired the song. And then I got Amy Barnett from Huntsville. She's quite a good songwriter, Red Dirt songwriter. I got her on the lyrics with me. And then I got Milo Deering, you know, the pedal steel player from Dallas. So actually, he's from Arkansas, but that's another story. So the three of us wrote this song, and it's about the pandemic. It's about COVID. It's about how things will get better and how we will heal after all of this one day.
And this one, Jen and them sent this over to me and said, hey, do you have some interest in this one? And as soon as I listened to it, I mean, that a lot of the podcast is, that's what we talk about, is how we're doing, what we've learned, how we're going to get better and all that. And is that kind of what you really took off of this last year, is figuring out what was best for your life?
Yes, I sure did. It really, I reflected. I spent a lot of time hiking and, you know, and enjoying nature and basically realizing how important it is to have freedom to do what you want. Because for the first time, I think everyone in the world was on lockdown. I mean, our generation doesn't know this. I mean, I guess maybe people in World War II or something, they knew something about that, but we didn't. So this was new. And I'm reflecting on that quite a bit, you know, that it's good to have freedom.
Now, did you find it hard this last year and a half, to find inspiration to write, or did it maybe spring out a little bit easier for you?
Obviously, I spent more time on songwriting because I had time. You know, I had to stay home, and I realized a lot of the people that I'm working with, you know, they were at home, you know, doing guitar work or drums or what have you, and they had a lot of time on their hands as well. So I had more access to studio musicians, so it was easier to make music and produce music than it was before, because people weren't touring and they had time. So yes, I would say the answer is yes. I had more time to write, and I used that time wisely. So
now, was it harder to stay more positive in the writing? Where did you have dark moments in there that you look back at and you're like, boy, that was a bad place I was in?
Yeah, I kind of did. and I put some of the songs aside. This is too low key, and this is too downbeat, and you know, and I was trying to find something uplifting and you know, and inspiring, you know, and I wanted to work on that. So I did find that.
Now, who are the songwriters that inspire you? Are they the ones that you normally write with, or are they outside influences that really inspire you on that?
If I mention artists, I've listened to a lot of Trace Atkins, you know, and obviously I listen to male singers that have singing the same key as I do, you
right.
know, and in the same style, you know, Randy Travis, Trace Atkins, Dwight Yoakam,
mm-hmm.
Alan Jackson. Oh, I listen to a lot of that, and I play a lot of sets where I play Alan Jackson as well. So I think probably those are the ones that I listen to a lot when I'm getting inspiration.
Now, what was it like this last year when the shows shut down, the opportunity to get out and play? I mean, how tech savvy did you have to become? And I know we're probably close in the same generation wise. Yeah. I've learned more tech than I ever thought I would in this last year. How about yourself?
Absolutely. Yes. I mean, I had to really know how to work remote on everything I was doing. And yeah, definitely. I really picked up a lot of new stuff, new workflow, new work mm-hmm. processes, you know, producing music.
How are you going to move forward with that? Are you going to keep some of that technology? Do you find that it's going to maybe make that easier for you as things open up, your schedule actually fills back up, some other ways to maybe cut time?
Yeah, I think COVID changed everything. I mean, I did some streaming concerts because that was the only thing that was allowed, because when you couldn't have a live audience. But I think people want to come to live concerts. You know, they're tired of the streaming. You know, it's not going to replace the live gigs by any means. And I can feel it, that people are waiting for everything to open up everywhere so you can start playing again. So it's going to influence it, but it's not going to completely change it.
Did you do Zoom songwrites and all that as well?
Yeah, I sure did. Yeah. And it works really well. I mean, if you get used to doing it like that, it's really handy.
Do you miss that person to person interaction? And have you had any opportunities to play since COVID got underway?
Yeah, I was supposed to be playing in Denmark and Slovakia and I don't know where, and they were all canceled for this year. So I've only been able to play here locally in Iceland. I played a big concert last weekend, and maybe for the last 6 weeks, it's been on again. But we're now completely restriction-free here. And I'm really looking forward to coming back to the States. I'm going to tour in Texas in October. So I'm really looking forward to seeing people again and playing everywhere live.
Now, when you come back to the States, what's it feel like when you land on the U.S. soil and you have the opportunity to get back out there and play again? How excited are you for those opportunities?
I am very excited. I mean, that's for me, that's going back home to my second home. And I just can't wait. You know, there's everything about it. I can't wait.
What kind of tour schedule you have finishing out this year? And is 2022 starting to pick up and things open up as well?
Yeah, 2022 is starting to materialize definitely. I'll be doing some small gigs in East Texas and the Dallas area in October. And mainly, you know, smaller clubs and try to get around as much as I can. And try to get my face out there with a new single.
That's right. Now, actually, how much different is the marketing this time around as opposed to the different singles you've had before? I mean, because of pandemic, obviously, not face-to-face with radio, but how has that gone for you so far?
I would say that it's easier for me because I have to work remotely. That people are now used to dealing with guys like me sitting in another country, you know, like I'm talking to you right now. Whereas I would imagine that coming out with a single in 2018, you had to do a lot more in-person, in-studio interviews. But now people are geared up for this, so it's easier to work remotely. So that would be the change, I think, from what it was like before.
Yeah, that's good stuff. Now, the single is Here I Wanna Live. And Axel, I always want to make sure and let our listeners know not only where they can find the single, the previous singles, the tour dates, social media, and all that. Where's the best place to catch all that?
I got a website, axelomusic.com. And people can find me on all the social media under Axel O Music. And I'm on Spotify under Axel O. So it's always the same.
Easy to find. Keep it easy on us. That's what.
It easy. Yeah.
He graduated from Oklahoma. He knows.
Keep it easy. Keep it simple.
That's good. Well, Axel, it is. I appreciate you taking some time, and you couldn't even tell you were across the pond.
Yeah, I appreciate you having me. I really appreciate the opportunity.
Now, most of us stay up too late sometimes or get a bad night's sleep. But how many days in a row does it take before you go nuts? Well, researchers at the University of South Florida looked into it and found things go downhill pretty fast. 2,000 people tracked their sleep for over a week, and even just one night of poor sleep had a huge effect on their mental and physical well-being. Poor sleep meaning less than 6 hours a night. Now, things got worse if they didn't sleep well for two nights in a row, and even worse after three nights. But then it leveled off for a few days. After night three, our bodies start to adapt to less sleep. So getting four or five nights of bad sleep in a row doesn't make us feel that much worse than three. But then, things change again. People really hit a wall after six nights of poor sleep in a row. That's when they said they felt their worst physically. In other words, some of us can deal with three, four, or even five restless nights, but that's the limit. And even after one night of bad sleep, people were more likely to feel lonely, angry, nervous, frustrated, and irritable. Our final guest on the episode is our good friend, the Grand Poobah, the master of barbecue, Meathead Goldwyn. And I better just stop with all of the name calling because he doesn't like all that anyway. Meathead, good to talk to you, my friend.
So, you know, I just did an interview with somebody in Australia, and he called me the Beyonce of barbecue. Now, ooh. I don't get that at all. I mean, I can dance.
Man alive, you should have told me that before. I would have had some music keyed up to intro you with and everything.
I like Poobah better.
Well, Meathead, how you been this last month, my friend?
I'm a free man. I've had two shots. I feel safe. We've been going out to restaurants. You know, I feel like Superman. It's just a great feeling to be returning to normal. How about you? Are you feeling good?
Doing well. It's just like everywhere else. Things are picking up. Life's getting a little bit busier, but we've learned how to do things a little different this last year. So
have we ever? You know, it's interesting. Since you and I talk about cooking a lot, I have reason to believe that a lot of people have really learned to cook and upped their game during the past year. Of course, the restaurants were closed. A lot of folks, particularly in the cities, who go out to eat a lot, forced to stay home. We know our website, AmazingRibs.com, which is all about barbecue, took a huge bump last spring. Manufacturers, people who sell grills and smokers, ran out. In fact, they're still low in inventory. The big box stores are low in inventory. All the supply chain issues about getting steel and stuff. But I think one of the byproducts is a lot of folks now know a lot more about food. And as they go out to dine more often, they're going to be a better educated audience. So if there's any silver lining to this, we've upped our cooking and gourmet quotients.
There you go. And a lot of folks, and I know you have the garden at home too, and a lot of folks are learning to be a little bit more self-sustaining as well, and using those veggies on the grill and in their cooking as well.
Yeah, my wife is a master gardener. She's actually taken the test to become a master gardener. And starting around now, I'm in the Chicago area, so it's a little cooler up here. But starting around now, the stuff is coming in. You know, tomatoes are not quite there yet. But over the next 6-8 weeks, you're going to be eating a lot of veggies. And we've talked briefly about cooking veggies, but next month, maybe in the height of the barbecue, the veggie season, we can talk about. I do a mean eggplant parmesan on the grill, and it's a lot of fun. You can cook veggies on the grill. In fact, one of my friends, Stephen Reichlin, who is a member of the Barbecue Hall of Fame, just recently came out with a good book on grilling vegetables.
I know each month we try to kind of delve into something a little different, and I love the topic you brought up because this is something we've never really talked on, seafood, fish, any of that kind of stuff. So I'm going to let, first off, what is the number one tip before you get started with fish on a grill?
Oh, man. Well, you know, particularly folks like you and me in the center of the U.S., getting fresh fish is the hardest thing.
Yeah.
By definition, it doesn't arrive in Oklahoma or here in the Chicago area until it's 2 or 3, maybe 4 days old. Mm-hmm. And that makes a massive difference. And my first advice is don't be afraid of frozen fish. A lot of the commercial fishing boats now have rapid freezing capability, and they're extremely cold temperature, or when they hit the docks have the rapid freezing. When you freeze any fish, any meat, it forms ice crystals, and those ice crystals are sharp, and they'll puncture through the muscle fibers. And that's why when you open a bag with pork chops or fish, there's a lot of liquid, and they have that gauze in the bottom to absorb the liquid. Right. We call it purge. If you freeze it really cold, really fast, it forms smaller crystals, and there's less purge. And so if you want to try to get stuff that is rapid frozen, and it's almost every bit as good as fresh. I recently, commercial plug here, I'm not being paid to plug anybody, but I've been buying from a company called Sitka Salmon Shares. They're out of, it's a small fishing fleet where they catch fish by hook and line out of Alaska. And they ship all over the country, and they have this rapid freezing. And I'm getting incredibly good fish on a subscription basis, monthly basis from them. And it's just awesome. But as far as cooking it is concerned, the biggest problem we have is because there's so much moisture in fish, it sticks to the grill.
Yeah.
And it's just really hard to prevent that. And the trick is to oil the food, not the grill. Now, you can oil the grill if you want. But if you've got a hot grill grate, the oil immediately changes its chemistry, and they call it cracking. Oh, you guys down in Oklahoma know all about oil and cracking and everything. But the oil cracks. It changes its chemistry. And if you oil the fish, the fish is cold, so it doesn't crack so fast when it hits the grate, and it will help prevent it. And one of the tricks is mayonnaise.
Really?
Mayo is mostly oil, mostly fat. There's something about the blend of the oil and the egg yolk that makes mayonnaise a really good anti-sticking agent. And it doesn't flavor the fish hardly at all. Most of it just melts and drips off. But season the fish, salt it, get your herbs on there. I love tarragon on fish, whatever else you're going to put on there. And then put a good thick slather of mayonnaise on there, and it will help prevent it from sticking. So that's a good tip.
Mayonnaise.
Huh.
How did you come up with that one? Were you out of oil one day and you're like, hey,
I figured this one out on my own, but I was in a fish restaurant and the food was so good. And I asked the chef for a tip, and he's the one who told me about the mayonnaise. And it's become a bit of a rage. I first published it. I think I was one of the first guys to write about it, and now it's hit all the culinary blogs and websites.
Now, with fish, do you also, I know that we've talked before about using like a cast iron skillet. Do you use that to put on there to maybe make it easier because of the grates?
You know, that's a great question. Years ago, my wife and I went up to Portland for a short 3-day weekend and stumbled into a street fair. And of course, Oregon is famous for its salmon. And there was a guy, and he had a big flat griddle, cast iron griddle. And he had some gorgeous salmon, and he was searing the salmon in the griddle and then serving it on top of a romaine salad. Ooh. And the hot fish on the cold salad with a little grated Parmesan. It was fantastic. We make this dish all the time. And I've got the technique and the recipe on amazingribs.com. But that hot griddle, and you can use a cast iron pan, and you get it hot, and you put the curved side down. That's usually the flesh side down first, so you can get a good dark brown sear. You know, if you go to a restaurant, a lot of the chefs will sear the fish and then stick it in the oven to finish cooking it. But on a grill, it is both a searing and oven at the same time. You can sear the flesh side until it gets golden, then you flip it over and sear the skin side, and you keep the lid down. It's in the oven, so you don't have to transfer it to an oven. And you want to shoot for in the range of 125 to 130, 135 at the most, interior temperature, for it to be tender and flaky. You can look at it, but you can't always tell. Temperature thermometer, digital thermometer, I've made this. You know, you've heard me preach thermometers before. Great for $30 or less, you can get a really good digital thermometer and you won't overcook it. And you don't want to overcook seafood because it dries out real quick, particularly tuna. Tuna is the worst. You just don't want to overcook tuna. But you salmon, you can sear it on that cast iron pan or a cast iron griddle, a nice layer of oil, flip it over and pull it off in the 130 range. And it's gorgeous, and I love to serve it on top of a green salad. It's wonderful.
Well, you mentioned something there too. My daughter, whenever we get salmon, she found a place that does the plank salmon, and they bring it out on the plank. Is if you're going to truly cook at home, can you make your own plank? Can you just is that even a possibility?
I wouldn't. The planks are usually cedar. And cedar for, you go down to Home Depot and buy some cedar, and it may be treated. You don't know. You don't want anything that's treated. I don't think they're using arsenic anymore in treatment. They used to put arsenic in lumber to treat it again, you know, so that the bugs would die if they eat arsenic. You don't want to do that. But you can buy cedar planks. I'm not a huge fan of this of plank. It looks cool. It's the coolest looking. It's like beer can chicken. It looks good. But, it's really not the best way, I think, to cook fish, because wood is a great insulator. It's full of air. So you put it on the grill and the bottom is not going to cook. It's not going to heat. You'll get air circulating above and it'll cook from above. But I would rather put it on a hot metal platen, on a griddle or a pan or something. And by the way, you can do that indoors, but it just stinks up the house. I mean, I love eating fish, but there's so many oils in fish and they're really volatile. And something about the smell of cooking fish is much less fun than the taste of cooking fish. So do it on your grill. And, you know, who cares if it vaporizes?
Aside from fish, obviously the second thing that most people would think of in seafood wise would be like shrimp on the grill, lobster. Those are all the easy ones. I want to hear something off the wall, if you will.
Well, we'll do shrimp because they're really good on the grill. Leave the shell on. Now, the problem with that is that there is they call it a vein, but it's really the digestive system. It runs from the shoulder all the way to the tail. And often it has sand or grit in it. You can see it. It's often black. Mm-hmm. And you want to get that out. And the way you get it out, a lot of people peel the shell off and then they'll put a knife and they'll score the body of the shrimp and pull that vein out. That's pretty easy to do. But there's actually a lot of flavor in that shell. So you want to, if you can, get a little scissor and snip down the shell, and then you can peel that the flesh open and get the vein out. Leave the shell on, marinate it if you want. A lot won't go through the shell, but the flesh is fairly permeable, and lots of flavors, garlic. You can use a flavored oils and stuff. It cooks really fast. The thing you got to worry about with shrimp is they fall through the grates and commit suicide. so if you can, you get what they call a grill topper. Weber sells them. It's just a big piece of metal with holes in it, but they're great for keeping things like shrimp. And they also, because they're hot metal, they sear it better. So you get a good dark color on the exterior. And as soon as it turns opaque, you can use a thermometer, again, 125, 130 is your target, but it's kind of hard to take temperature, especially a small shrimp. So usually when they get white or pink, that's when it's time to pull them off. You were saying off the wall. I've been cooking octopus lately. Wow. Now everybody loves calamari, if you can find a restaurant that knows how to cook calamari, it's usually breaded.
Yes.
But calamari and octopus are similar. They're cephalopods, and they grill beautifully. The key here is you can't overcook them. They turn to rubber bands the minute you overcook them. You can marinate them, and it doesn't take long, 15 minutes to an hour in a marinade, and on a grill topper again, so they don't commit suicide by jumping through the grates. And you get some nice color on them. Don't overcook them. And if you're not sure, taste one. When it feels right, it's tender, pull them all off of there. And I make a Greek lemon sauce. It's on AmazingRibs.com. It's a classic traditional lemon sauce. And there's another recipe, I think it's on the website, for balsamic vinegar sauce. It's really good. And then you want to have a baguette, a loaf of bread, and just mop up all that juice and sauce. Clams, shrimp, clams and mussels. Oysters are cool. You go down to the Gulf Coast, Mobile and New Orleans, and you can get grilled oysters down there. And the trick to them is you want to put an oyster has a big hump side and a flat side. You want to put the hump side down because there's a lot of really good liquid in there, and you don't want to lose that liquid. So you put the hump side down, and what you can do is you can throw sawdust or hay, now clean hay, nothing that a horse has been laying in, on the fire, and it makes big billowing smoke, because these things cook in a hurry. You know, they cook in 3 or 4 minutes. Mm-hmm. So if you want to add a little smoke flavor, you got to get a lot of smoke in a hurry. Mm-hmm. And then I take a stainless steel mixing bowl and put it on top of them, so it captures that smoke in there. And then if you want, when they pop open, you can put a few squirts of hot sauce in there, or some grated cheese, or you know, make up your own sauce of béarnaise or hollandaise or something. Mm-hmm. And boy, they are really good. Or you can take them out of the shell, and if you've got a smoker, smoke them. Have smoked oysters, they're fantastic.
I mentioned to you before, before we came on the air, you mentioned octopus. I told you I had an octopus. Well, then you even made it better, because you used the other part of my story in this too, because my 16-year-old, she is one that she'll eat just about anything, but there's two things she will not eat. She will not touch mayonnaise, and she will not touch jelly. And so anyway, she loves the sardines. She loves the canned oysters, that kind of stuff. Well, anyway, we went to the store, and I was getting some sardines. I think I just wanted some snack sardines. And she wanted some of those little octopus pieces that they had. And I was like, okay, we'll try it. And so, yeah, we brought it home. She ate that whole can of that octopus. Wow. Still will not touch mayonnaise or jelly to save her life.
Isn't that interesting? I know a lot of people that are grossed out by mayonnaise, and I haven't delved into this. I don't know why, but some people just won't eat mayonnaise. I have some vague ideas as to why, but they're not something we can talk about on the air.
Point well taken.
Shocking. Yeah, a 16-year-old who loves to eat like that. That's amazing. I mean, how many parents out there are listening now saying, oh my God, my kid won't eat anything odd or unusual. But grilled octopus is fun. The technique for that is to simmer it first for an hour or two. Don't let it boil. Okay. If you've got a digital thermometer, keep the temperature around 190, and you'll just see a couple of little tiny bubbles. At 212 is when it starts boiling raucously. But just keep it at a low temp in some salted water for an hour or two, and that'll help tenderize it. And then you take it out, dry it off, throw it on the grill, and you can paint it with a chili and adobo sauce, or just plain garlic oil or whatever. And they shrink quite a bit. They curl up. But they're a lot like calamari, and they're wonderful. I love the texture, and they're really good on pasta or on salads. Mm-hmm. If you have a sous vide machine, and this is it's a special device that you use to heat water. You can put the octopus in a Ziploc bag. Mm-hmm. You can suck out the air and put it in the water at about 160, 170. For an hour or so, and that really tenderizes them. There's no better way to tenderize them. Then they go on the grill. Fantastic.
How many garden hose variety octopus did you eat before you finally got?
I just had some. Well, I made a batch the other day that I was experimenting with, and I forgot to rinse them really. Oh. You got to rinse these things really well, because they often have grit in them, and they tasted fantastic, but every bite was crunch, 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 and they ended up in the trash. The other thing I tried doing is I tried smoking them. Mm-hmm. Don't do it. Awful, just awful. I mean, I had, you know, $15 worth of octopus on the smoker, and they just were inedible. So, you know, that's the fun part of my job. I experiment.
and we always talk about how to pair things up, and since your wife's the master gardener, I love to ask you what veggies you're going to put with anything on the grill, especially seafood. I think pineapple and things like that. Is that the kind of stuff you would grill around it?
Well, grilled pineapple may be the best thing you can put on the grill. You know, I mean, here's Mr. Meathead. But, you know, if you have never grilled pineapple out there, folks, there is just, I mean, it is just, you take your pineapple and you just shave off all the skin, and you can leave a few of the little bumps in there. Mm-hmm. And cut it across until you get discs. You can cut the little, the core is really hard. Mm-hmm. You can cut that out. So you got a ring, not the canned pineapple. I'm talking about fresh pineapple, and just throw that on the grill. Make sure the surface is really clean. Yeah. Same thing for fish. You got to have a really clean grill surface to make sure you don't want grease from your steak or your hamburgers on your pineapple or your seafood. So you got to really clean the surface. But that you grill that pineapple till it gets some nice dark black char marks, flip it over. Oh, man, that stuff is just fantastic. And, yeah, it works. I really like it with pork, you know, grilled pineapple and pork. It's just sort of Polynesian, it sounds. That's fantastic. In fact, I do a sweet and sour pork. Everybody loves sweet and sour pork, you know, at Chinese restaurants. I do it on the grill. I get a pork tenderloin, which is just a small muscle, not to be confused with pork loin, which is a big muscle. Tenderloin is about the size of a baby's arm. And I'll split that in half and grill that and then chop it into bite-sized bits, grill some pineapple, grill some red pepper or green pepper, stir them all up and pour. You can either buy a sweet sour sauce in the grocery or make your own. I have a recipe called, what's it called? I have a sweet sour sauce recipe on the website. I can't remember the name of it. And boy, kids, and you put it on a bed of rice. If you want to throw some, cashews or peanuts on top, it's every bit as good as the stuff you get in the restaurant and it's not fried.
To go along with it also, what sauces do you, what is your favorite go-to maybe tartar recipe?
Well, I do have a recipe for tartar sauce, and doggone it, I don't remember what the heck's in it right now. your daughter's favorite material.
She and that's funny because she loves my tartar sauce, hates mayonnaise.
Oh, really?
So yeah, she loves tartar sauce.
I love mayonnaise, and there's some mustard in there, and I think I put some capers in there, and if you want to put some pickle relish in there. But I got to tell you, with fish, for me, it's cook it properly, get it to the right temperature, and get the heck out of the way. Yeah. You know, I mean, I don't feel like I need much in the way of sauces. Fish is so delicate, so elegant on its own. We don't do much with sauces. My wife does a simple on cold days, winter days. She'll take a piece of salmon and put it in a an aluminum foil wrap and pour a little soy sauce in there along with some pineapple or something like that. Bundle it up, pop that in the oven, and it, you know, in 20 minutes it's done. And boy, that's delicious. Soy sauce seems to work. Teriyaki sauce, which is really just a sweet garlicky soy sauce, really works great with salmon. That's fantastic.
Well, again, Meathead, always want to make sure and let our listeners know where to find more information, the recipes, upcoming dates. I know you've got a big Hall of Fame thing coming up I'm excited about. Got those things over there behind you, too, to talk about.
Yeah. Well, of course, the book, Meathead, The Science of Great Barbecue and Grilling. If you're a type of person that wants to know why and how, there's a lot of science in there, along with some great recipes. And then the website, AmazingRibs.com, which is by far the largest and most popular barbecue and grilling website out there. And I'm easy to reach. Just post a question on the website, and I have a team of really good experts. We'll help you figure out what grill to buy or what thermometer to buy or what sauce to make. So we're at your service.
There you go. Well, Meathead, it is always good to see you, my friend. I wish you a great rest of your July and look forward to talking again in August, my friend.
And to all your listeners, have a great summer.
Well, thanks again for joining us for this 108th episode in Season 2 of Good Questions with Cameron Dole. And if you ever have a comment, a question, maybe anything else you'd like to know, just hit me up on the contact page at gqwithcam.com. You can also find me on Instagram, Twitter, TikTok, and Facebook, all at gqwithcam. If you'd like to help out in the funding for this podcast, go visit the merch store. We've got hoodies, shirts, tumblers, mugs, stickers, and lots more. That's gqwithcam.com/shop. If you have a special guest idea, email me, gqwithcam@gmail.com. Again, thanks to our good friend Brandon Allen for coming up with our theme music. we're going to let him play us out an extended break. Hope you guys have a great rest of your Tuesday. Thanks for tuning in.